Hi, everybody. I'm Dennis Prager. This is Dennis Prager's house, Dennis Prager's fireplace, and Dennis Prager's dog, Otto, who, as I have told you, I do believe may be the most famous dog in America, or at least maybe tied for first. Maybe he's even just in second place. But the good news, as I keep telling you, which shows good rearing, none of it has gone to his head. That's right. And that's the way it should be. Anyway, it is great to be with you. I explain each week. This is completely non-scripted. It is completely spontaneous. I don't even have makeup on, which is probably apparent, which is probably not a great thing, but nevertheless, it is what it is. So I usually offer some thoughts, and then I take your questions. I'm going to take questions, and then I'm going to offer thoughts today. There's a reason, as you will realize when I do. So here we go. And by the way, I don't rehearse these answers. I'm sure I would give better answers if I did, but it's just part of the way of doing this fireside chat, which, by the way, getting a lot of views. We're approaching 1 million every week. And I was thinking, I mentioned on my radio show, for those who don't know, I do a radio show. You could hear it anywhere in the world on the internet and in most cities in the United States on radio as well. And I was mentioning, I saw ratings for the cable news networks. More people watch this than I believe, the last thing I want to do is misstate it, but I think than any given show on CNN in the United States, at any rate. So it's a very amazing thing to think about. I would like everybody to see it, and it has nothing to do with me. It has to do with these are really good ideas. And where do you get good ideas these days? I mean, think about it. What did I just read that California schools are going to teach the fluidity of gender to kindergartners? It's almost unbelievable to expose 5-year-olds to the notion that, you know, one day they may rethink whether they're a boy or a girl. Why would we want to do this? So I'm just thinking, what do people learn in schools now in America? And I'm sure other parts of the West, there's so much history to learn. There are so many foreign languages to study. There's so much music and art to learn. There's so much math to learn, so much science to learn. Why do they even have time for that stuff? Why is gender fluidity? It shouldn't be taught in high school. It has nothing to do with the mandate of a school. It's getting to the point where I think a lot of parents in America are going to have to rethink whether to send their children to a public school or a regular school, even a regular private school. I would not want my child in a school that robbed my child of his or her innocence. There's already too much robbing than of innocence. Here's the irony. You get robbed of your innocence at 5, but they stay innocent in some ways. There's a naivete about human nature that continues. It's like everything's upside down. We rob you of your innocence, but we keep you naive. But anyway, that's another subject. Okay, so I'm going to go to your calls. I see that's my radio brain functioning in automatic. Aaron, 16 years old. By the way, most of the questions that I see on this are from teenagers. I offer you, young people, something that you don't get offered at school. Insight into life. And a realistic view of things. I don't talk down to you. And my agenda is to give you wisdom, because that's the task of an older person. That's if older people can't give wisdom to younger people, then they have lost the biggest reason for getting old. The biggest thing that people could do who get older is give the benefit of experience and learning to younger people. Okay, Aaron 16, Cedar Rapids, Iowa. Hi, Dennis. Hi. What are the characteristics of a good man and how can I grow to be one? Aaron, I would like to give you a hug. The very fact that you care about that makes you an outlier, unfortunately. How many people want to be good? Not a good student, not a good athlete, not a good doctor, which is all fine, by the way. Just good. A good person? Whew. Who's teaching young people? Who taught my? This is not new, by the way. Almost none of this, the gender fluidity is new. But it was all there when I was your age, too. And the nonsense. In fact, that's why I wrote a piece, How I Found God at Columbia, because in graduate school, I was taught so much nonsense. I was going out of my mind. How could I be taught so much nonsense by bright people? Anyway, it's you could see it on the internet, How I Found God at Columbia. And I spoke about it at Columbia, but they wouldn't allow it. Isn't this amazing? Columbia would not allow it to be, what is the word, simulcast? What is our term? When we broadcast and it's live on the internet?
Live stream.
Live stream. They wouldn't allow it. Amazing. So this is not new. Wanting to be a good person is the most important thing everybody should aspire to. Everybody. Everything else is secondary in importance. Everything. To be a good person, and it isn't easy. I have a speech which is available. I'm not making an ad here. It's just that's where it's available. I don't even own the Prager store. My syndicator does, which is fine. But you can download it from the Prager store. On raising good people. And I explain what parents could do in order to do it. The first thing you have to do, you at 16 or your parents, is this has to be your priority. You have to consider that more important than what college you get into or even whether you go to college. It's more important than anything else in life, aspiring to be a good person. Not perfect, okay? Don't aspire to be perfect. It's not attainable. It'll drive you crazy. It'll drive the people around you crazy. And then there's no room for any vices and, you know, spices of life that are not perfect. You know, it's like, as many of you know, I smoke cigars, just to give an example. You know, I'm sure a perfect person, I don't know why not, but a perfect person wouldn't smoke cigars. And believe me, that's not my only imperfection. But that's okay. You know, this stuff, you like going to a casino every so often, go to a casino. In other words, whatever it might be, so long as you're not hurting anybody or yourself, it's okay. I don't want people to be saints. Okay, I want people to be good. It's an important distinction. So I love that you want to be. I think the first thing you have to do is realize, not I think, I know. The first thing you have to do is realize that you can't follow your heart. You have to follow a code of goodness. And you can't rely on your feelings to guide you in the right direction. Because it's true about everything. You feel like having cheesecake, but if you need to lose weight, it's not a good idea. We have to battle our nature all the time. That's the way it is for people to stay faithful in marriage. Most people have to battle their nature, especially men, not only men, but especially men. And every man knows this. That's why a lot of men historically have been afraid to get married. Oh my God, you know, I have to be faithful the rest of my life. This is really what goes on in a man's mind. It's not what goes on in a woman's mind. A woman has other issues that go on in her mind. Oh my God, I'm going to compromise perhaps some career ambitions for the making of a family. Both sexes have to battle with various things. Life is filled with battle, but it's a good battle, and you get better. So, in that regard, I always tell parents: teach your kids self-control is infinitely more important than self-esteem. That's a beginning. You have to figure out how to control yourself, but not too much that you'll go nuts or become unfun. So good, not saint. So anyway, I've written a lot about that, and that's the reason for my latest book, which I'll be going to talk about after the questions. Jack 15, Boston, Massachusetts. Can you get value out of the Bible if you are not religious? So I'm going to, I've started with questions because I'm going to talk to you about the publication just last week of the second volume of my Bible commentary, The Rational Bible. I don't have religious people in mind when I'm writing this, five-volume commentary on the first five books of the Bible. I have you in mind. Wisdom is wisdom. You don't have to be religious to get wisdom from the Bible. Absolutely not. Abraham Lincoln kept the Bible on his nightstand, read it every single night for its wisdom. He almost never went to church. You hear Otto, everybody? I must say, I'm the one who really stays humble, because it's almost inevitable that when I start talking, he starts snoring. There is, you know, thank God you don't. And then I'd have to seek a different form of livelihood, and certainly that would end the fireside chat, unless people played it in order to effectively fall asleep. But Otto was Otto. Of course you get value out of the Bible if you're not religious. But here's the thing. I do believe that if you are not religious and you are open-minded, certainly I could speak for my commentary, which is called The Rational Bible, because I only use reason. I don't ever appeal to your faith. However, reason is my vehicle to faith. Just want you to know. I'm not unique in that way, but I admit that I'm probably somewhat atypical. Reason is my road to faith. Ethan, 20, Las Vegas, Nevada. Howdy doody, Dennis. I like that. Howdy doody, Dennis. That's awesome. One bit of my life advice my mother has always told me is, quote, the only person who will care about you in life is you. And I wanted to know your thoughts on that. Just so we're clear, I have an extremely loving, caring, and supportive family, but my parents are not afraid to kick me in the behind, metaphorically. Maybe it shouldn't only be metaphoric. To get me to be a better person each day. Well, your parents sound great. Your mother sounds fantastic. It's not, your mother's point is an excellent point. She wants you to understand everybody, very few people are going to be preoccupied with you. You're preoccupied with you. All right? And that's normal. You're not preoccupied with almost anybody else. The exception is parents are preoccupied with their children often, but while they love them forever in healthy cases, they're not as preoccupied when they're 30 as when they're 3. I mean, it's just, you can't be and you shouldn't be. You have to live your own life, among other things. And anyway, what are you going to do when they're 30? You can't hover over them as you did when they were 3. So your mother's point is well taken. It's not literal. I mean, but the most important person to care for you, I don't mean take care of you, but care for you, love you, is your spouse and your friends. Spouse and friends are unique. By the way, they're the only people we should seek to have love us. This is such a, I should do a fireside chat on that topic. You can't do any job well if you seek to be loved. The only people you should seek love from is your spouse and your friends. That's it. And that's good to seek their love, because so that's a very good thing. But any position you have in life, you will compromise if you want to be loved. Half the people are in politics, and 4/5 of those in Hollywood are there to be loved. And it's not a healthy thing. Teachers should not want to be loved by their students. Politicians should not want to be loved by their constituents. Parents should not want to be loved by their children. Did I say teachers? Yes, I did say teachers. How about this? I don't want my airplane pilot to want me to love him or her, as the case may be. I just want them to get me there and tell the staff, the flight attendants, and the passengers what to do in case of a crash. I don't want them to want to be loved by the people in the airplane. And same with my doctor. I want my doctor to do a good job, not seek my love. This is going to sound terrible, but to a certain extent, love is overrated. In our time, historically, we could have used a lot more of it. We could always use more of it, obviously, but it's offered as the be-all and end-all. It isn't the be-all and end-all. It just isn't. It's the best with regard to peers, namely spouses and friends. But that's it. All other relationships are not, nearly all other relationships are not peers. Parent, child, teacher, student, clergyman, congregation. If your rabbi, priest, or minister just wants to be loved, they'll do a lousy job. If the president of the United States wants people to love him, or her, as the case may be, it's going to be a disastrous, truly a disastrous time for the country. Okay. Scott 63, that's a jump. Salt Lake City, Utah. Dear Dennis, thank you for educating us that liberals and conservatives have more in common than liberals and leftists. That is correct. I say that all the time. I say that every show. What can we do then to convince liberals that the political divide today is between them and leftists and not between liberals and conservatives? Thank you. Well, you could show them my video on the differences between liberal and left, and I show seven differences. You can just give them example after example. My favorite example is with regard to race. Do you believe in all black dormitories? All black graduations. If you do, you're a leftist, not a liberal. Liberals believe in integration. Leftists believe in segregation. There are so many examples. The liberals were the biggest supporters of Israel. Leftists have always hated Israel. Just to give a domestic and an international example. What the left has successfully done is propagandize liberals into thinking their enemy is the right or conservatives. It's not true. As Alan Dershowitz, a lifelong liberal, professor of law at Harvard, said to me, it's on film, and you will see it in the film that Adam Carolla and I are in, coming out later this year. No Safe Spaces is the film. It'll be in theaters around the country. And he said to me, and you will see it, as a liberal, as a Democrat, as a Hillary Clinton supporter, I far more fear the left than I do the right. He's a liberal. That's the point. So how do you get how do you convince them? It's very hard. They have been effectively brainwashed into believing that they are on the left. Well, and obviously they are left of center. They're not right of center, but that they are co-equal with left. That's why the left call themselves liberals. They never say I'm a leftist. They say I'm a liberal. And that's the way they're characterized in the media, which is often left and not liberal. But they should, they'll know too late that they backed the wrong group. That's the tragedy. They really do believe that we conservatives are their enemy, but we're not. We are conserving free speech in America. Leftists are ruining it. Liberals have always stood for free speech. It's a third example. Levi, 17, United Kingdom, Nottingham. Good day, Dennis. Good day, Levi. I happen to be Jewish, and after a long journey, I've come back to my religion. By the way, with all respect, at 17, you can't have that long a journey. But I get your point, and I salute you. I did engage in sexual intercourse when I was still on my journey. Does this make waiting for marriage pointless, or can I be a born-again virgin? No, you can't be a born-again virgin. I know it's, you're being funny, and it is funny. I understand. No, of course it's not pointless. That's like saying somebody who, and it's not a perfect parallel, but somebody who has, been an alcoholic, is it pointless for me to stop now? because I was an alcoholic for X number of years. No, the whole, that's the point. My view on sexual intercourse before marriage, I have responded to in a question here, and I'm not sure that anybody will be satisfied. There are religious people who won't like what I say, and there are many non-religious people who won't like what I say. But I try to live by what I preach, and I don't seek to be loved. I seek to tell the truth as I see it and hopefully touch people's lives. So in that sense, here goes in a nutshell. I don't believe in no sexual contact before marriage. I'm not sure it's healthy. I think a couple should know each other well and have an idea. Do we have chemistry in that arena? It's pretty bad to learn after you're married that there's no chemistry in that arena. Having said that, you can certainly find out if you have chemistry without intercourse. I think intercourse ought to be safe for marriage. Has nothing to do with my religious views, because the argument for it has, there are religious arguments, obviously, but there are secular arguments. Say, whatever you save is precious. That's it. This is not rocket science. So I do believe that intercourse is a unique aspect of sexual life. Unique. Therefore, since there is so much joy possible and excitement possible without that, why not save that for the person you marry? And by the way, it would so help. It would end the whole problem of the so-called rape culture and of girls on campus thinking they were used the next day and then saying that the guy is, sexually attacked her. And he says, what are you talking about? We were both drunk. You were okay with it. But if there's no intercourse, by and large, I mean, obviously there are other forms of stimulation, et cetera, but that is unique. It also makes babies, which gives it a really unique power. So that's my position, one, hold that. It's really a romantic position, ironically, when all is said and done. More than religious, it's romantic. To save something for marriage is exciting, and it makes marriage special in that way. But again, I am not for a complete abstention before. I mean, there are people watching who, for religious reasons, do abstain completely. I'm not trying to convince you not to. I just want you to know that. I respect your decision. But the vast majority of those of you watching are not in that religious category. And therefore, that is the advice that I offer. But there's no such thing like born-again virgin, obviously. Okay. Oh, yes. Oh, look at this. Oh, Roseanne from Bulgaria. We could take the next week. I have a big affection for Bulgaria. I'll tell you why next time. So I want to end with, what's our time frame? 20? Did I talk for 20 minutes?
23.
I have a built-in clock. It's from all the radio. So listen, this was a very big week for me because the second volume of my 5-volume commentary, Explanation, maybe even better than commentary, Explanation of the Bible, the first 5 books, the most important of the books, because everything else in the Bible comes from those 5 books. Everything is based on that. That's the creation story. That is Adam and Eve. That is the 10 commandments. That is the Exodus. That is love your neighbor as yourself, love God. It's all from the first 5 books. Everything else in the Bible and in Western history comes from that. So I'm explaining those first 5 books to people of no background and people who have a very strong background. If you read the reviews of the first volume, which was actually the second book of the Bible, I came out with that first, Exodus. If you read on Amazon, there are over 500 reviews. And how many people say, wow, Dennis is a Jew and I'm a Christian. And boy, I learned more in that book than I did in 10 years in Sunday school. And then Jews are writing, why do you like that? I learned more than I did in 10 years in Sunday school, too. We're Jewish Sunday school. And it's not to knock Sunday school, but this is meant to explain this stuff. And it's to be life-changing. This is sort of a Prager's rules for life, but it's not Prager's. It's the Bible's. Jordan Peterson wrote this magnificent book, 12 Rules for Life. These are hundreds of rules for life because it's so rich. So the book that just came out, if you want to zoom in, is Genesis, the first book of the Bible. And it's really a work of all of my lifetime. I do know biblical Hebrew really well. That made it possible. I don't think it could be done without it. And I'll give you just a few examples from this to give you an idea of how relevant this stuff is. So just as an example, I mean, the book is filled with these examples. The very beginning, the very first sentence changed all of history. And I have like 10 reasons in here why in the beginning God created the heavens and the earth. The first sentence of the Bible changed everything. One example is God created nature. This was the only God in the history of all the gods of the world that created nature. All the gods of every society on earth were part of nature. That's why there was a god of rain, right? A god of rain, a god of thunder, a god of fertility, the sun god, the moon god. Not in this case. There's one god. This god made nature. This god is not part of nature. And how about this? Nature is made for us humans. We are not merely a natural part of nature. Yes, we are. Obviously, we're part of nature, made of stellar dust. But nature was made for us, not us to be just part of nature. That doesn't mean we abuse it, but it does mean we use it and that it is there for us. It says conquer nature. People are very uncomfortable with that. This is all just in the beginning of the book. Yes, if we don't conquer nature, we're doomed. What is getting a cure for disease if not conquering nature? Isn't the plague natural? Isn't cancer natural? Of course they are. Our task is to conquer nature, or nature will conquer us. That's the irony. I have a love of the beauty that is within nature. There's no question. I mean, I get chills at the Grand Canyon. I understand that. And I am in awe of the natural processes of the world and of the universe for that matter. But I don't have any romantic view of nature. If we don't conquer nature, nature will destroy us. See, this is a good example of growing up. Not, oh, nature, oh, Gaia, the goddess. People are worshiping the earth now. I don't. I worship the creator of the earth. There's a very big difference between worshiping the earth and the creator of the earth. All of this stuff is in here. This is life-changing stuff. People want to take down the statues, not just of Confederate soldiers in the United States, but of George Washington now, because he owned slaves, and of James Madison, he owned slaves, and Thomas Jefferson, he owned slaves. So they judge the past by the standards of the day. But in one verse, one in here, God saves Noah. In the flood story, God saves one good human being named Noah. But you know what it says? It doesn't say Noah was good. It says Noah was good in his generations. That one verse taught me you can only judge people in their generations, not in ours. Otherwise, nobody who ever lived is good. I got all that. You think you come from a dysfunctional family? This ought to make your day. Every family in the book of Genesis is dysfunctional, probably more dysfunctional than yours, which is really something. After all, the first family, right? Right? The two brothers, the two sons of Adam and Eve, Cain and Abel. Cain kills Abel. I'll bet you very few of you have a sibling that killed a sibling. That's pretty rare. And then Joseph's brothers sell him into slavery. Is that correct? All of this happens to show you dysfunction is normal. It actually, I think of this as a gift. So you think you have a problem family? Please know problems in family is normal. An untroubled family is a pretty rare thing. How you doing, Otto? Otto comes from a very untroubled family. See, here's the irony. That's why he's sleeping, because this is not relevant to him. This family has been very good to him, and as it should be. And he's been good to us, I have to say. Anyway, all of this is in here. Listen, if 1/10 of you get the book, this will be a powerful statement of what I believe in the bottom of my heart. That's why I'm working so hard on this. People tend not to write Bible commentaries to get wealthy. I mean, let's be honest. But I do believe that if this book becomes nearly as important as it was in Western history, we will save the West. This is the foundational work, even if you're an atheist. At least learn it. Listen, I love reading people who explain Shakespeare to me. I don't fully understand Shakespeare, and English is my native language. But I need help. How much more so do you need it in this? So, by the way, those of you in America, it's even at Costco, which I'm very touched by, that Costco would order tens of thousands of copies, means that they know I write so that people can understand. This is not highfalutin stuff. It's deep, but I write it in a way that can make it understandable. That's, by the way, most of my work, is to make it simple without being simplistic. So really, I hope you'll get an Amazon or a bookstore or Costco or the Prager store where there are autographed copies, because they sell it at full price at the Prager store because you get an autograph. But if, so it's up to you. You want, I level with people. You want the autograph, it's the list price. And if you want deduction, obviously Costco or Amazon or what have you. It's called The Rational Bible. It's meant to change your life for the better. And I just hope you'll get it as I work on the third volume for hopefully publication next year. Anyway, it is great to be with you as always. I will be with you next week. So from my home to yours, thank you so much on behalf of Otto and all those who make the broadcast possible. Have a wonderful week, and I'll see you in a week. Thanks. Thank you for watching. If you'd like to keep these fireside chats free, please do by donating to PragerU.